I've talked many times about my trips to Las Vegas, which started sometime around 1989, I think was the first time I went there. And I was kind of a rookie poker player at the time. And one of the first places I wanted to play was a casino that was world famous for poker called Binion's Horseshoe. And I went there, and this was the day when you could still smoke in casinos, and the people at the Binion's Horseshoe Casino smoked big time. So they had low ceilings, and the smoke just hung there in the air. It was kind of dirty. The white $1 chips were so dirty you couldn't tell them in some cases from the black $100 chips. But Binion's had a reputation for taking care of poker players. They even had a free buffet for poker players, lunch and dinner 7 days a week right there adjacent to the poker room, because they wanted players to come and stay and feel comfortable. And that all goes back to a man by the name of Benny Binion, who had started the place in the early 1950s and who, for some people, is known as one of the innovators of Las Vegas, not just for poker, but for all sorts of gambling. His story is told now in a new book called Blood Aces, The Wild Ride of Benny Binion, the Texas gangster who created Vegas. And here's the man who has written the book, Doug Swanson. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So before we talk about the Vegas portion of Benny Binion's life, we have to tell a little bit about the Texas portion of his life, where I think the word gangster would have to apply, right?
Oh, I think so, or racketeer, whatever nomenclature you wish to use. But yeah, he had a group of criminals who did his bidding, and he ultimately controlled almost all the gambling in Dallas and the Dallas area. And he had a good organization working.
Not only did he have an organization, he also had some connections with the law, but that couldn't keep him from being charged with murder. Was it three times?
Twice, but he walked away from them both. He owned the courts. He owned the judges. He owned the sheriff's department. He owned the Dallas police. He paid handsomely for this ownership, but he owned them.
So why did he have to leave Dallas?
Well, he backed the wrong candidates in the 1946 elections. So he lost his man in the sheriff's department. He lost the sheriff, and he lost the DA. So they told him, either leave town or you'll be killed or arrested. So he loaded up his Cadillac with allegedly $1 million in cash. He got two of his henchmen with Tommy guns, and he drove from Dallas to Las Vegas and started a new life in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Now, in the subtitle of the book, you call him the Texas gangster who created Vegas. Of course, there are people who have seen the Warren Beatty movie who believe that Bugsy Siegel created Vegas. Who really gets the credit?
Well, that's a good movie, that Warren Beatty movie, but it's terrible history. I mean, it exaggerates Bugsy Siegel's role tremendously. Siegel had a role, but he was only one of many. Binion was one of the others. There was this great wave of mobsters who came flowing into Las Vegas in the late 1940s, early 1950s, and they really created the city that you see today. These were gambling professionals who were being pushed out elsewhere and came to Las Vegas because gambling was legal there.
How long did Benny have a hold on things there in Vegas? We'll get into the details of the story in a moment, but how long did he reign as one of the kings of Vegas?
Oh, a good 40 years until his death, more than 40 years until his death in 1989.
Wow.
But from 1946 to 1989, he was a major figure in Las Vegas, with the exception of a few years he spent in Leavenworth for tax evasion. But he was a big deal in Vegas all those years. He started out as just a casino owner, and by the end of his life, he was a major civic figure, a beloved civic figure in Las Vegas.
That's interesting. Here's a guy who, you know, committed multiple murders and was probably doing all sorts of dastardly deeds while he was in Las Vegas as well, at a time when the mob was ruling things. And, you know, you could argue that he was part of the mob because he was himself a gangster. And then later on, it's almost as if his image got whitewashed.
Well, he gave away a lot of money. That helped. But also, it was his personal charm. I mean, he was a very approachable guy. He didn't have an office at the Horseshoe. He just had a table at the restaurant. And anybody could walk up and sit down and talk to him. You might buy him a meal. He might give him some chips, comp him some chips. He was very approachable, very personable guy, unless you were on his bad side, in which case he was a very dangerous guy.
Tell me something about how he ran his operation that made it different from other operators in Vegas in the early 50s.
He, as you alluded to in your introduction, he ran a gambling joint. He didn't have one of these entertainment palaces out on the strip. He didn't have bands. He didn't have comedians. He always said he didn't want his money blowing out the end of some guy's trumpet. The Horseshoe was just a place you went to gamble. And you're right. It was grimy. It was smoky. It was full of unsavory characters. But if you wanted a place where you could come in and put down $1 million on a roll of the dice, that's where you did it. And so it was the place to gamble in Las Vegas. And that's the image he cultivated, and it worked really well for him.
He had no limits?
Right. Your first bet was your limit. So whatever you had there you wanted to put down, you put it down and you roll the dice.
I did hear one story about him that a guy once came in and said, I'd like to bet $10 million. And the pit boss contacted Benny, and Benny said, tell him he can bet $1 million 10 times.
Well, there's a lot of stories like that going around. I think some of them are true and some aren't. That was part of the challenge of the book, was sorting out the truth from the legend. But that sounds like Binion. I mean, he would take the big bets because he knew ultimately he would win it back. He knew that you might win that first roll, but by the time the fifth or the tenth roll came around, the money would be back in Binion's pocket.
Yeah, anybody can get lucky on one roll, but you get him to roll more than once, that's where the odds come in, and the advantage, the house advantage, gets you every time.
Right.
All right. Now let's talk about how downtown Las Vegas, with people like Benny Binion, was differentiated from the Las Vegas Strip from the very beginning.
Yeah, with Fremont Street, which runs along the spine of downtown, was the first site of casinos in Vegas back in the early days, and it was always sort of a run-down place. I mean, the Strip was where you went for glamour, and the Rat Pack was hanging out at the Strip, and you went to see the big shows and the big resorts and all that. But Fremont Street in downtown was always sort of grimy and gritty and still is, even though they've tried to clean it up.
Yeah.
It's still got that feel of there's a little bit of, it's just a little dirtier and not as nice as the Strip, but it's got its own charm if you're inclined to look that way.
Yeah, whenever I walk through there, I always have my hand on my wallet at all times.
Right.
I mean, I know that they've got attractions down there like the Fremont Street Experience with the canopy of lights, and they've got a zip line going through there, and they're trying to make it a little bit more family friendly, but it still has that feeling of, what's going on here?
Yeah, they're trying to make it very hip now. They've got lots of money coming in, putting in these boutique hotels and things like that and fancy restaurants, and it's succeeding to a point.
Yep.
But it is still Fremont Street at its heart.
Yeah, and I know Zappos has its corporate headquarters that moved downtown, and so they've got a new young core of people who are trying to change that part of town. But like I said, it still makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up anytime I'm there. And that goes back to the Benny Binion influence, because grimy was the way he ran business.
Yeah, he just ran a gambling joint. That was what he ran. That was the end of the story. And he was, as I said, he was very successful at it, and you came in to gamble. And he didn't cheat at the Horseshoe, because if you got caught cheating, they didn't call the police. They had their own guys who took you out back and beat you up pretty good. Sometimes they might kill people for doing this, but you didn't mess around at the Horseshoe. You came to gamble, and you did it straight up, and if you caused a problem, then you had a problem.
Now, one of the tourist attractions that I know that was there for a very long time was a display of $1 million in cash embedded in plastic, which everybody who went to the Horseshoe seemed like they had to have a picture of themselves taken in front of that. Was that real money?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't Binion's money. He claimed it was borrowed money. But, yeah, it was. They were real $10,000 bills. And you're right, it was quite a tourist attraction, and it was a way to get people in the door. Supposedly, there is a photograph somewhere of Charles Manson and his family posing in front of the $1 million display. I haven't been able to find it, but I've heard it's out there somewhere.
Well, there's the quality of personnel you could find in Binion's on any day.
Well, yeah, there were high rollers, low rollers. There were some of the most powerful people in Nevada would come by and have lunch with Benny, but at the same time, you had professional hitmen, drug dealers, guys like that. They came to the Horseshoe as well.
Let's talk about the operations. You just mentioned a moment ago, you know, don't get caught cheating there, or you're going to get taken out back, and you may or may not emerge from that room in one piece. Tell me some of the other things that operated under Benny's control, and similarly, the other mobsters who were running Vegas for decades.
Well, Binion had his own little niche there, and yeah, he got along pretty well with the other mobsters who were running the other casinos. there was a very rough introduction period for him when he first came to Las Vegas, and they framed one of his friends for murder, sort of trying to show him who was boss. But ultimately, there was a mutual respect there with Binion and the other gangsters. And I call him the Will Rogers of mobsters, because he never met one he didn't like. He would go on and on about what a great guy Bugsy Siegel was, and Meyer Lansky, and Mo Dalitz, and these other guys who were well-connected with organized crime. And Binion was their friend. And as he was friends with many people, as I said, he was friends with the powerful, he was friends with the criminals, he was friends with anyone who would come in and say hello to him. That was one of the big attractions. You could walk in and meet this gangster there at his table in the restaurant.
So
that's just the way he ran it.
Even though they may have had a business rivalry, they still got along with each other, and there wasn't war going on between them?
No, there were a few skirmishes. When Benny was in Leavenworth, he had to cede control of the Horseshoe to some mobsters, but he came back at Leavenworth and bought his share back and took it back over. I think there was a sense that Benny wasn't going to encroach on anyone else's turf. You know, he didn't want to expand beyond the Horseshoe. He had no plans on other casinos, four other casinos. So he was left alone to do his operating, and he knew how to get along with these guys. And he was buying the authorities in Las Vegas the same way he was buying the authorities in Dallas. Mm. And he knew how to run his business, so they left him alone.
To give you an idea of what kind of town Vegas was several years ago, Oscar Goodman became the mayor of that town, and then his wife succeeded him as mayor. And for a long, long time, Oscar Goodman was the number one lawyer for the number one mobsters in Las Vegas. And,
oh,
that's,
yes.
And that's the guy they chose as the mayor. It's the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris, talking with Doug Swanson, author of the book Blood Aces, The Wild Ride of Benny Binion, the Texas gangster who created Vegas. Now, we're talking about all of this, but I started talking about going there to Binion's Horseshoe to play poker. Let's get into some of the poker history, and in particular, one of the most famous poker games ever. Long before there was a World Series of Poker, there was a gigantic heads-up match between two famous poker players, right?
Maybe. That's the legend, that Johnny Moss and Nick the Greek, Don DeLos, faced off in a marathon poker match in somewhere in the late 1940s. And this legend has persisted for years and years and years, that this was the greatest poker match of all times. I defy anyone, however, to find proof that this exists. There are no newspaper photographs. There are no magazine photographs. Benny Binion, later in his life, gave a long, long interview to the University of Nevada Oral History Project. The transcript goes on for more than 100 pages. He does not mention this poker match at
all.
So it's a great legend with no factual proof whatsoever. And there are many poker scholars who've looked at this and still can't find definite evidence that it happened. Now, Johnny Moss claimed it happened. He put it in his autobiography, but he said it happened in the late 1940s in the Horseshoe, before the Horseshoe even opened. So that's debatable, too.
Yeah. Well, what's so amazing to me is that if it did happen, the story is that Benny Binion created this heads-up match as a publicity stunt. But
right.
How could there be a publicity stunt with no publicity if you can't find any newspaper or other records of it?
Exactly. That's a very good point. So it's a great fable, a great myth, but find me the guy who was there and has proof. Now, he did create the World Series of Poker as a publicity stunt, and that's very well documented in the early 1970s. And his plan was to have these poker players, a handful of them, playing there in the casino, and people could come in and watch, and then they would wander off to the tables and lose money at blackjack and roulette and the dice. But this thing mushroomed and became this extravaganza that you have today.
Yeah. The amazing thing about it was the first year they did it, 1970, I think there were only a half dozen people there. And the players played until they felt like they were done, and then they voted on who was the best player, and that person was declared the winner. And I think there wasn't even a cash prize for them, because it was a cash game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very small, I mean, compared to what you get now. I don't remember the exact amount, but now it's millions and millions of dollars in the prize bucket.
Yeah. Now, the World Series of Poker was owned by Benny Binion and was owned then by his family as the owners of Binion's Horseshoe, which eventually was sold to Harrah's, which is now Caesars Entertainment, and they moved it to the Rio, and they've exploited it big time. And what has happened to the place that Benny built, Binion's Horseshoe?
It is still there. It is Binion's now, called Binion's, although the family does not have an interest in it. I was there a couple of years ago when I was last in Vegas, and you can still get the feel of the old horseshoe if you walk through it. I mean, it still has that sense of, there's no smoke anymore, and there are a lot more slot machines than there used to be. But, you know, there's still the ghosts are kind of banging around in the room there, and you can still get a sense of what it was like back in the old days. I first went to the horseshoe in the early 80s to cover the World Series of Poker. So I think I saw it in its prime with all these guys there in their polyester and their long sideburns, and as you say, the cloud of smoke hanging in the low ceiling there. That to me was the real horseshoe, but you can still get a sense of it.
Now, I've not been able to make it my way all the way through your book, so I've got to ask you about this. The legacy of Benny Binion was to have been carried on by his children. There was Jack Binion, Ted Binion, and Becky Binion.
Right.
That kind of fell apart, didn't it?
Yeah, when Benny died and then his wife Teddy died, the family started fighting over the assets. They went to court. They were very bitter lawsuits. And ultimately, as you say, the whole interest was sold to Harris. Jack Binion went his own way and worked with Harris and has been very successful. Becky is still in Las Vegas. He has another daughter, Brenda, who lives in Amarillo, Texas, who was very helpful to me in the book. She's a wonderful lady. And then he had two other children who died, a daughter who died of drug problems, and then Ted Binion, who was quite well known, who also had drug problems, and he either died accidentally or was murdered, depending on your point of view.
Yeah.
And that was a big sensational case in Las Vegas a while back.
Right. And I know Jack did try to carry it on and actually did own other casinos here in the Midwest, particularly down in Tunica, Mississippi,
right.
and a bunch of others that he owned. But to this day, the Binion name, you may be one of the few people keeping it alive.
Well, I was surprised that there had not been a full biography written of Benny Binion, because he's such a terrific character and really interesting, and I think not given his due for being really one of the founding fathers of modern Las Vegas. But beyond that, he's just a great story.
Amarillo Slim called him either the gentlest bad guy or the baddest good guy you've ever seen.
Yeah, that was a really accurate summation. If you were on his good side, you loved him, and if you were on his bad side, watch out.
Yeah, you could be dead if you were on his bad side.
Many people were.
Yeah.
Are. Still.
Yeah, they still are. And, then, of course, so is he. He died in 1989.
Right. Of natural causes.
It's an amazing story of a guy who, frankly, I look at as a really, really bad guy, even though he may have created a place that I enjoyed going to visit and play poker in. There have been many places since then that have done it better, and I'm glad I wasn't around in the early days, because getting on this guy's bad side was a really, really bad idea. The book is called Blood Aces, The Wild Ride of Benny Binion, the Texas Gangster Who Created Vegas, and here's the man who wrote it, Doug Swanson. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.